What up, everybody? Welcome back. This week, I'm going to do two episodes because I got behind a couple weeks with the audio from the other one. This is an episode, another one from Mildly Interesting over my talk show that you can watch, actually, with me on screen on Prohibited.com. So go do that. Check that out. Or listen to these because I'm going to put them here and listen to them on your commute. I appreciate your ears either way. This one was a good episode. This one, Bassem Youssef, a little bit of a history about him is he was a doctor, a surgeon in Egypt, and he got into comedy a few years back when they had the uprising, and he started doing like video, almost like Daily Show type of stuff, and he just exploded and got really popular in Egypt. He's known as like the Egyptian Jon Stewart. And because of, you know, the government over there, they didn't like him, and he got exiled, and he was kind of forced to leave Egypt, and he ended up coming to the U.S. of A. And he's got a new podcast out, and we talk about that. And super nice guy, super talented guy, super smart guy, very interesting guy. And yeah, so that's who this episode is. And once again, I love you all, and thank you for listening. And send us a tweet at, you know, TWL Podcast, or send me a tweet at My Name Is Razzle 2 if you're on Twitter, or give me a comment on my Instagram at My Name Is Razzle if you listen to this. You know, I see the downloads on the websites, like I can see all the downloads, but you know, I'd love to start interacting with some of you. Some of you that are still around, I would appreciate it, because I, you know, I'm curious what people like or what they don't like or whatever. So yeah, thank you very much for everything. Again, check this episode out with Bassem Youssef. Welcome back to another episode of Mildly Interesting. My name is Razzle. And this is going to be a fun episode. I'm really excited to talk to this gentleman. He's an Egyptian comedian, writer, producer, surgeon, physician. I'm just going through his list here. He's got a documentary called Tickling Giants Out about him leaving the medical field to become a stand-up comedian. And I definitely want to hear about that since, you know, I'm a comedian myself. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm round of applause to Bassem Youssef.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And I got that
Where's
right
the applause?
Time, right? There we go. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you. Give me some love, guys. Show me some love. All right, I'm the token Arab here. All right, cool.
That's interesting. Well, let's get to this. But so you speak dual languages.
Yep.
I was just reading a thing the other day.
I mean, you can't say dual, because when you say dual, people will think they are equal. English is a much, much, much lower level. So it's like a distant second.
So what would you call it? Bilingual?
Yeah. Bilingual.
Multilingual?
No, multilingual. No, I'm just two.
Two. I was reading an article about different languages and how there's a good percentage of people who speak multi languages have different personalities. Like, it's almost like where, you know, they have two different personalities. When they're speaking one language, they're of a different personality than when they're speaking the other language. Do you find yourself like when you're speaking Arabic?
I don't know about double personalities or multiple personalities, but I can tell you for sure when I am trying to perform in English,
yeah.
I have to rewire my whole brain. I have to relearn how to speak, because comedy is a third language.
Yeah.
So you can give me a joke right now and I can tell it on stage and I can totally mess it up because I didn't do the right emphasis. I didn't do the right pacing, delivery, everything. It's just like it's a totally different science. It's dynamics,
right?
And I had to learn that. So yeah, I could be extremely funny in Arabic, but I can say an extremely funny joke in English and it doesn't land.
Now,
so I had to relearn that. And I think like the material that I use is funny, but it might be my problem that I'm not giving in the respect that it deserves.
So when you're crafting your material, your stand-up, do you craft it first in Arabic?
No.
Which you're,
No.
No?
It's
so you're writing the premises and you come up with everything from ground level
even
up?
Even the references. So even if you do something that in English that would be only understood by Arabic audience, I don't do that. It has to be understood by people across all spectrums. But it is not, that's just the first phase.
Yeah.
It has to be understood. So I have to be like digging deep inside the comedy in a different language, in a different reference, with different reception.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's a whole nother level to, you know, just observing and writing jokes and stand-up.
Yes.
To have to deconstruct that. That's amazing. Mm. You're from Egypt.
Yep.
And you were a doctor.
A heart surgeon.
A heart surgeon.
Yes.
Now, you were also in 2013 named 100 Most Influential People in the World by Time Magazine.
But that's not because of medicine. That's because of the satire.
But you were born in Cairo.
Yeah.
Siblings? Any siblings?
An older brother. He's an engineer.
Okay.
So he's an engineer and I'm a doctor. In the Middle East, you're allowed to be one of three things: an engineer, a doctor, or disappointment.
And what did your parents do?
My father was a judge.
Okay.
And my mom was a university professor, a business professor.
What made you go? Is your brother's older or younger?
He's older.
He's older. So he became an engineer before you became a doctor.
Yes.
What made you choose the profession of being a doctor?
Because I didn't like engineering.
You didn't like engineering?
And again, that's the only option that
I had. It's really, your parents were like, you can be an engineer or a doctor.
If you have the grades, you have to use them.
Was the goal to always leave and like because some people in the Mideast over there, they'll become doctors or engineers and they'll move to like the States or move to other areas. Was the goal to become a doctor and relocate, or was it
not in the beginning? It just like midway through my studying medicine, I decided that I need to leave.
Yeah.
I didn't like the medical field there and I wanted to come and work here.
And work here in the medical field or just in...
No, in the medical field. I finished all my transfer exams, the USMLEs, the clinical exams. I was coming back and forth from the United States to finish my exams.
Okay.
And I already got accepted in Cleveland in a pediatric heart surgery fellowship. And then the revolution happened and then everything changed.
And you were over there when the revolution happened?
No, I was in Egypt. Yeah.
You were in Egypt when the revolution happened. And you were helping people like... You were saving lives while I
was like with like many other doctors. I was part of like the medical teams that went into the makeshift clinics and helping other people.
Yeah.
During the clashes, I was not like a political figure. I was not involved in all of the politics. I did was just like found myself in a place that I thought like I thought I could help. And then as the revolution ended, when I started reviewing the media. And I see how the systemic brainwashing of the masses, because this was all state-run media, I said, like, you know what, I want to say something about this. So I started to do these videos in my laundry room. And I thought maybe 10,000 people will watch it. That would be a great number.
Yeah.
And I ended up in a couple of weeks in 5 million people watching.
Jeez Louise.
And I know that 5 million is nothing now. I mean, like, your dog can get 5 million. But that is 2011 in Egypt. At that time, that was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And suddenly I've got like all of these offers from different channels, different TV stations. And I ended up signing a deal for a TV station in the same time, the same day that the papers from Cleveland arrived. And I had to make the choice. And so should I choose to continue and save money, save lives, or make money? And I chose the money.
You chose the money. I mean, but the thing is there's something, I was just watching On Netflix, David Letterman has that talk show. My guest needs no introduction, and they just had my next guest needs no introduction. And Seinfeld was on the new one. They did a bonus one from the Emmy. They had like an Emmy speech, and Jerry Seinfeld was talking to Letterman, and Letterman's like, "I don't do anything, but I haven't changed the talk shows. I haven't changed television." And Jerry Seinfeld's like, "Yeah, but you give people something to enjoy. You're saving lives by making people laugh." And so, I mean, one could construe and one could say the same thing about you going from, you know, saving actual lives to speaking out against and, you know, making people laugh and satirizing.
I don't think any comedian or any self-respecting comedian or satirist will accept that.
No?
We're not saving lives.
This is
something that people say
to
glorify
a
profession that is meant for a certain... cause, which is not just laughter, but like, you know, bringing important issues, people to discuss. But saving life is a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I think this is too much. I think this is a little bit of an arrogance.
Yeah.
That we think that we save lives I think the people who save life are are the people who save life.
I mean, I definitely see a lot of that in Seinfeld's interviews and his opinions. I mean, he's still one of the funniest, but he definitely has the air of comedian to him. Were you growing up? Were you a fan of comedy? Were you always a fan of comedy?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a fan of comedy, and I got introduced to American comedy, and I had to kind of start from the bottom.
Yeah.
From kind of like slapstick, so Friends. Then I moved up a little bit to Seinfeld and Frasier. So, and then I discovered Jon Stewart, and now that's political comedy, that which is totally different. That's like, because that's current news, and you need to understand the references, because why is he making fun of Fox News? What is Fox News, and who is George W. Bush? I mean, I know who George W. Bush, but like, what's so special about him being stupid? And then I knew.
What I love about The Daily Show is it, when Jon Stewart especially was on it, is you don't need to, it was such a great facilitator for jokes and commentary, and you didn't need to be well-known or well-renowned about what was actually happening, because they would tell you, like, they would always set up these amazing jokes and satirizing.
Yeah, but if you're not American, I still have a homework to do.
Fair enough.
Like, if you don't know what is the difference between Democrats and Republicans, you will have to know that.
So would you watch the show over there and have to deconstruct why people are enjoying it?
When I was watching him in the beginning, I didn't understand what she's talking about. And then I had, like, it kind of like, all right, I started to Google stuff and read about stuff. It's like, oh, he means that. And like what is liberal and what's conservative?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we don't have liberal conservative. We just have dictatorship.
Going from dictatorship to liberal conservative over here, which is almost, I mean, arguably very similar in the sense of to me, it seems almost very facade-ish, like a facade of choice, considering they only give you two choices. Like, to go from there to come here, from what I understand, you got in a lot of trouble for your show over there. And here, you know, you can say anything you want and pretty much have freedom of press. Has that helped? Or, especially with comedy, because comedy can be like a defense mechanism, and you kind of want to push the barriers. And when you have more barriers to push over there, over in Egypt, especially to here, now anything's kind of fair game. Has that helped your comedy, that now you can do anything, you can talk about anything? Or
no, it helped my comedy in the fact that, like, especially with Trump, like, there's a lot of similarities that I can draw between the right wing in Egypt and the right wing in America. I think the right wing everywhere are similar, and there's a lot of comedy references that you can use that. So that's helped my comedy a lot. And then to compare and contrast, and having like our dictator being buddies with your president, that's amazing material. But it's not like, I couldn't be able to speak, because I was able to speak there until I was shut down. So, and then I come here, and so that didn't really change on a personal level. It is just like, I think the circumstances, the political environment here and there, it was funny to draw the similarities.
And so you've been here in the United States for a year and a half, or you just been in Los Angeles for a year?
I've been in Los Angeles for a year and a half, yes.
And prior you lived up in the South Bay?
Yes.
And you're straight up comedian now. You're no more doing the medical field or anything?
I'm not doing the medical field anymore.
So I got some questions about the medical field here, because...
Oh, please do.
This is interesting. You graduated from Cairo University's Faculty of Medicine.
So the body has 602 bones. Okay, well done.
Is it really 602?
Yes.
Because this is interesting. It says here you received training in cardiac and lung transplantation in Germany.
That was more of a lung transplantation technology. I was working in a medical device company that were developing a new technology. They were here in the States, and basically, it's instead of putting the heart in a ice box, they're putting it in a box that it keeps beating to the transportation. So that was like a research year for me. And then I went to Germany and I did assistant heart devices and a little bit of cardiac transplantation there, yes.
Would you say, is Germany, because if they're learning and they're teaching this technology in Germany, is Germany like one of the forefronts of the medical field? Because a friend of mine went there for like a new form of like hair transplant. And it was like, it's cheaper over there and it's newer over there because I guess they're testing it out or whatever. And hearing this from you, it makes me wonder if...
Now, Germany is very good in medicine, but still America is the lead.
It's still the lead?
And you will hear that from Europeans. They will tell you that Americans are a few decades ahead. Yeah.
What about stem cells? Because we're prohibiting that, right?
No,
are we still?
No,
are,
no, no.
Are
no,
we
no.
allowing that
But
now?
The prohibition was removed by Obama.
Okay. I didn't know that. Mm. So you grew up in Cairo. You're born in Cairo. You have an older brother. What's the comedy scene over there? Because to go from you know, medical to satirist, then now you're doing stand-up. Is there a stand-up scene? Is there a comedy scene in Egypt? Or what's
There was a stand-up scene that was starting on a very small level in the 2007, 2008. It didn't continue. And I think part of it is you need an environment for this to flourish.
Yeah.
So when the revolution happened, there was an explosion of stand-up, an explosion of comedy. But now the ceiling has just dropped so low and people are just doing social comedy, which is not very interesting. And now all of the comedy shows look and sound the same.
Yeah. So there wasn't really a breeding ground for just live entertainment even over there.
No, it's just it seems, I mean,
what do you do in college? If you're going to college there, what do you do in your free time if you're not?
There are clubs.
There's clubs?
There are cinemas.
Cinemas?
There are everywhere. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying that there's not. I mean, there's live performances of musicians.
Yeah.
But for a city like Cairo with 20 million people living there, there should be 100 times more.
That's what's baffling to me.
But this is the, it is a result of a horrible dictatorship who is stifling everybody down. It's they're afraid of people, a large amount of people collected in one place. I mean, for the past 3 years, our Egyptian soccer league has been played without audience, without spectators, because they don't want to have 100,000 people in the same place.
For real?
Yeah.
So they've been playing, nobody even wants to go to the stadiums.
They can't, because
they can't.
Many of them, they just for security reasons. And this is the thing. All dictatorships, they can do whatever they want. They can take away your freedom because of security reasons.
And that's happening now. They're still doing that now. So what did the revolution do if there's still a dictatorship now?
No, the revolution has, at least for the time being, has failed big time. The revolution was taking over, or at least tried to take over for a couple of years, and then it regressed. Yeah, it's like what happened in the French Revolution. You know, they thought they won, but then they didn't.
But then they didn't.
And then the monarchs came back. Yeah.
And you love Los Angeles. You're here forever.
It's amazing. I mean, you cannot get enough of the weather here, right?
What is that your favorite part of Los Angeles, or?
Oh, the weather. But listen, I'm addicted to the sun.
Yeah.
I love the weather. I love the warmth. I don't care if it's 120 out there. Anything better than a snowstorm.
How'd you settle on LA versus New York?
Weather. But also,
because New York's got a good comedy scene as well.
Yes, but New York is very stressful, and I don't know if I have family. I have two kids, and I don't know if I can actually live in Manhattan with a family.
Yeah.
And again, the weather is just a key thing. And you know, it has to be one of these two cities.
Yeah.
I think you can live in New York if you're single or if you're extremely rich.
Yeah, it's. I mean, LA's getting that way though too.
Yeah.
So you have your new, you have a podcast out, right?
Yes, I have a podcast called Remade in America.
And what's, tell me about this. Let's talk about
this. So Remade in America is about outsiders' experience. So I think that everybody is an outsider in their own way. So they tried to make it about immigrant experience, but I didn't like that. I think everybody has an outsider experience that make him struggle against it to be successful. So my first guest was Maz Jobrani, who's
love him.
Comedian.
So funny.
You know, he came from Iran in the worst time ever.
Yeah,
as
hilarious.
6 years old, and he became an outsider since the get-go. Yeah, I had Maria Hinojosa, which is the first Latina NPR woman. That's an outsider story.
Yeah,
Carmen Esposito.
Oh, you okay, know, yeah, I know her.
They know, it's a comedian with
a sexual
orientation.
I know her from Chicago.
Yes,
yeah,
and she has it's a wonderful episode that we had with her. She's lovely. Baratondi Thurston. So we're having all of these conversations with people. What makes you as an outsider, and how did you deal with it, and how did you progress in your career? And I think everybody can relate to this podcast, because whether you're an immigrant, whether you're a black, brown, white, you are somehow an outsider.
I definitely, especially in a town or industry that we're in, where You know, when you strip everything away, everything is about, you know, is about either creating or, you know, being seen or attention, be it going up on stage for, you know, or in a band or whatever. There's definitely the jester idea of, you know, I'm the only person in my family who's, you know, moved out here or moved out of, you know, Bay City, Michigan, where I'm from. And there's definitely the outsider. It's like an outsider gene almost in the entertainment industry. I feel like it's definitely, it's like a calling. Like it's, you know, you don't know any other way. And I feel like outsiders, they always feel like outsiders because they don't know any other way to live or than to be themselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, I mean, that's why it's not just like you don't have to be black or brown or some or an immigrant. You could be a white man who was born in the middle of America and you don't feel that you belong. Or someone who would live in the Los Angeles or New York and you feel that it's too overwhelming. Yeah. So that's why I think it's a very important issue.
You know, it's a issue that needs to be discussed, especially, you know, I was reading the other day and I even made a note of it here just because, you know, recently we had, you know, Anthony Bourdain and Spade, you know, with these suicides. And there's a lot of kids, you know, I wonder if social media, because it's so huge, if it also, as there's the benefits to social media, if, you know, if it can make people more feel like outsiders.
Well, I think social media can be a little bit deceiving. And so, for example, I get a lot of hate comments and hate mail, and you think the whole world is that. But when you meet people, they're very nice.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big mistake that you let yourself be affected of what you see on the screen, because it's really not real. And we know this, and we tell that to ourselves, and we still get pulled in into that wormhole, into that black hole of fakeness, of it's nothing. It's, and yet we need it. We can't get over it. And we talk about detoxing and how, like, it's dangerous to be on it for a long time, and still we can't give it up.
That's, we get those likes, and it releases that. You
not
know,
even
that,
the likes. The whatever. Idea of, like, you want to be connected somehow.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, like you said, all right, why don't you shut down your Facebook or Instagram? But, like, I want to be connected to people.
With the connection, being wanted to connecting to people, but also being an outsider in America. Is there, on your podcast with the shows that you've had so far, is there a through line of, like, through the success stories, like through their how they overcome feeling like an outsider and being
remade? It is basically like we're very lucky to have like very successful people in their careers. So we ask them, how did they attain this kind of success being outsiders? So yes, so of course, like, they tell you how they dealt with it. Maybe they have dealt with something that related to their families, to their surroundings, overcoming a certain environment that they were brought up into, whether they were, you know, resisted or struggled against religion or tradition or social norms. This is the kind of stories that, like, I'm really interested to tell, because I had this same experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I went against two regimes that both of them hated me and their supporters hated me, and I didn't care.
Does your stand-up reflect that? Or is your stand-up more like autobiographical and from the outsider point of view?
Yeah, it's kind of like it follows my journey from the Middle East here.
Yeah.
And it kind of like gives you like a perspective of what it is to be living in the Middle East and what it is to be a Middle Eastern coming here fresh off the boat. Yesterday I was in Long Beach and I was making fun of the fact that, like, I was with like a wonderful group of Arab comedians. And I was
where did you play?
In Long Laugh Factory, Long Beach.
Oh, love that, yeah.
And I was with like lovely names like Aaron Kader, Rami Youssef, Mike Leb, Chaldanian Syrian guy, Mike Leb, his last name, like, all, anyways, they're all Arab Americans. But I said, like, guys, I'm the only true Arab here, because all of these were born or raised here. And they actually have to imitate a bad accent. I don't need to imitate a bad accent because I have a bad accent. So it's like I was making it was like I'm the only one who's fresh off the boat.
Yeah.
All of those Arab Americans have lived here all their lives. They're basically American with an Arab background. I'm 44 years old, and until a couple of years ago, I lived all my life in Egypt. So that's a different perspective.
That's such a fascinating thing, because like I've been in the States my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to visit Japan a couple years ago, and that was, I was there for 3 weeks, and that was just like an amazing culture shock. But I can't imagine uprooting completely my whole life, especially quitting, you know, stopping my, a medical career that's successful, and uprooting my family and coming over, you know.
Yeah, it is hard.
And it's something I applaud you for. And I mean, that's, you know.
Thank you.
And I'm glad people like you have done that and have shown that it's you can do it. And I'm glad you're welcome. And it's a bummer that, you know, especially in the climate that we're in now, there's a lot of especially with the Trump administration wanting to, you know, not let people come in and pursue their dreams.
What the Trump administration has been doing is bad, but I'm very sorry to say that the seeds for this was planted during the Obama administration. I mean, I'm a big fan of Obama.
Yeah.
But we should not turn our heads away that, like, ICE and all of these paramilitary troops were funded and built and expanded under Obama. And Trump is just like using that.
He's the scapegoat.
I mean, it is very easy to point fingers at the Trump administration and the right wing, but a few months ago when they were discussing the budget, the Democrats signed in on increasing the military expenditure, military budget by $60 billion. Why do you need $60 billion more dollars for your military while you're shutting down all of these arts and all of these social programs? Why do you need more? How many more countries do you want to invade? You are already the strongest country in the world. Why do you need $60 billion more?
Yeah.
And you're shutting down all of this. And the Democrats are complicit in this. So you cannot just, like, it's the way that the American administration in general, it's just like, you know, there's so many good things about America, but the way that the Congress and the House has always been working for the best interest of the lobbies, not for the people who voted them, is something that is not just exclusive for Trump. It's been going on for years.
Would you say, because I mean, from what I gather and from what I've read, I completely agree, especially with lobbyists, going from a dictatorship in the media, controlled media from Egypt to here, where a lot of the media is a narrative about blaming everything on Trump, do you see similarities in the way the news cycles portray everything to kind of fit a specific narrative?
It's totally different, because at the end of the day, you don't have one source that can control everything. Here, it's controlled by different interests. But at the end of the day, people can speak and say whatever they want, and nobody is going to be put in jail because of what they say. But at the end of the day, people were like kicking and screaming because net neutrality, and it didn't really matter. This was just like five people who were not elected, who sat in a closed room and decided that you're not going to have net neutrality anymore. If you ask any American, would you ever vote for this? And he will say no. And yet, these kind of decisions are being made. So you need to really revise, what does it mean to be a democracy?
Yeah, it's definitely.
And again, I'm coming from the worst places of democracy in the world. I have no right to kind of judge it.
No, please judge it. Because I agree completely.
But I'm speaking as like a resident of this country, and hopefully, like, I'm gonna be a citizen one day. So I consider this as my country, and I like you, like all of them, we pay taxes for this. So when we pay taxes, we have a right of representation, and we need to ask: are we represented, or are the other people who are like paying those politicians money are the ones their interests are being represented?
I agree completely, and I think, I mean, if anything, I think we could take a page from listening to, you know, outsiders or, you know, foreigners who now live here and want to live here, because in the end, the ultimate goal is to make the United States and make our homes the best homes that we can, and the best, you know, civilization we can. And when there are these voting things happening, and like net neutrality and these lobbyists and these $60 billion for, you know, armed forces and the military, when they're removing funding from public parks in Yosemite and,
even,
you know,
drilling in them,
you know, and drilling them and fracking. And, you know, what was that? The pipeline not too long ago, you know, they
Dakota Line.
Yeah. And they're drilling through all this property and, you know, these Native Americans' lands, and they're just, having no disregard for the land, but because it benefits somebody in a suit in Washington. But then you know, a tweet goes viral and everybody's concerned about this new, you know, about what's on the back of a jacket instead of actually what laws are being passed or who's signing what.
Yeah. It's always been a distraction.
We don't need, I mean...
Because it's always sexy in the news to talk about the back of the jacket, not because of the legislation that are being signed right now in the Congress, because that's boring. And and then people just like are all into the show business of it all. I mean, even regular people. So yeah. We have, last year had the Women's March. 750,000 people took to the streets. Amazing. Yeah. A few days later, elections, 12% showed up.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe if you go to the booth and then kind of like have like pink hats over you, gonna go and vote. I don't know. It's just like it's all about a show. It's just like it's a show. It's like, and at the end of the day, like people, he's not gonna leave because of your tweets and Facebook.
No.
You're not gonna change the construct of the House and the Senate because of like you're angry on Facebook.
Yeah,
it's because you go in and vote.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. I mean, you guys have like the most powerful tool in the world that you can actually change things every 2 years. Every midterm, every presidential election, every 4 years. And I don't know, it's wasted. I don't know why. And again, it's just like I talk because we don't have this kind of luxury.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's even with the first show, is, you know, a couple of weeks ago they voted in LA for the, you know, California primaries.
Yeah, and like people didn't show up.
A fraction showed up, and everybody.
And I think you almost lost it for like, the Democrats almost like were gonna boot it out from the race, something like that.
Yeah, something. I wasn't following it too close, but the show is like you go on Instagram or you go on the internet and everybody's posting pictures of their voting, and it's like, are you voting to make the change or are you voting because you want the sticker? Are these voting stickers part of the... Is that just so you can put it on the internet?
I'm fine if they put the stickers, but go vote.
But it's like those marches. I mean, they're going to these marches and they're holding these signs.
But
they're making these signs.
And
they're not doing...
It doesn't change the policies.
Mm-hmm. We're still getting... You know, the representatives that were voted for are still signing laws and taking money from, you know, military contractors from Lockheed and Martin and tobacco industry to have laws passed or not laws passed.
Yeah. And how we change this by voting?
Huh.
I don't know. This seems to be like a very depressing interview.
I thought
it would be more comedy.
We can. I mean, but it's interesting. It's interesting to me because
I mean, I'm fine with depressing.
Yeah.
I live for that.
I mean,
the drama comes from the Middle East. We live in
very depressing. I weep in the shower every night, so this is like normal to me. Who's your favorite comedian? We can go lighthearted here. What's your...
All time is George Carlin.
George Carlin.
Of course.
Did you listen to his albums? Do you have access in Egypt with the controlled...
It's on YouTube.
All on YouTube. So
yeah.
So you had... It wasn't like websites were banned or preventing you from...
No, websites have been banned only this year, but they banned Arabic vloggers and Arabic websites.
Okay.
They don't ban YouTube.
But other than that, you can go on the internet and find English or American culture.
Yes.
Did you watch a lot of movies growing up? Were your parents, you know,
I mean, it's on television.
Yeah.
We had the Muppet Show, man.
Okay.
If you have the Muppet Show,
well, that's
you have everything.
That's where, like, you know, I'm a simpleton from Michigan. I see the desert in Egypt, and I see pyramids, and I think, you know, I'm...
Of course.
You know, I mean, it's...
Yes. And that's the kind of stereotypes that we're left with. Do you go to work riding a magic carpet? No. I go to work riding a camel. You racist piece of shit.
I mean, I wasn't going to say that, but I didn't know about, because like I know...
You're going to go ask me really about the magic carpet?
No, 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 please. I mean, how do they work?
They have no sound at all.
It's
like a Tesla, absolutely.
I watch the movie Aladdin, and he takes Jasmine around a magic carpet around the world in like 2 hours.
And it's played by an Indian, which is crazy. Because, of course, Indians, Arabs, they're all brown.
But I didn't know. I guess that was interesting to me. I didn't realize... You had like the Muppet, like I think of some countries like Russia or even China, and when they're in dictatorship, I guess I'm just under the assumption that a lot of, you know, American culture is prohibited.
These countries do dictatorship right. We even suck in our dictatorship. We do half-ass work of dictatorship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, that makes sense.
It's incompetence everywhere, even being a dictator. So, what do you expect?
Do you talk about like that in your stand-up?
Something like this.
Something like that? What are you excited about? Like, what excites you about like, what excites you on a day-to-day basis? Or a week-to-week basis? Like, what?
Well, it's creating new stuff, like, not just material for the stage. I work on scripts. Okay. Like, I'm like every other guy in Hollywood, I'm working on a project.
Working on projects.
I'm working on scripts.
Taking meetings and lunches.
And it's kind of like, maybe what excites me is, like, I hope to break into the American media.
Okay. You have a show on Fusion, I saw.
That was, like, a couple of years ago. But, like, I want to have, like, either a regular show or a scripted series, because I think just, like, people talk a lot about representation. I'm talking about, like, absence. Complete absence. As I said, there's a lot of people who come here as first generation in my situation who are, you know, our images are either whitewashed or not there at all. And I think we should have a voice.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's a lot of stuff that we can discuss and bring to the table and, you know,
I definitely see in the, you know, just reading.
Or I can write something and Tom Cruise can play it. Yeah. Or Matt Damon. I mean, they did The Last Samurai and The Great Wall, so they can do some Middle Eastern thing.
I'm a big fan of Tom Cruise, so
I love him.
Sign me up for that.
I love him. I mean, if you said, like, he's going to play something, go ahead,
please. I will watch Tom Cruise in anything.
Yeah.
He delivers. I feel like now is the time for that, though. I mean, we're in a climate, you know, where there's so many networks and so many available channels for shows, be it Amazon or HBO or Hulu or Netflix. And a lot of the stuff I've been seeing them put out have been, you know, various forms of from different races and different points of view that isn't just, you know, a white dude.
Yeah, well, so I feel like I'm you're waiting here for mine.
I feel like you're here for the right time.
I hope so.
You'll get it, because literally 30 minutes before you got here, I'm reading the trades and you just signed a CAA.
Yes.
Congratulations on that.
It's a very exciting move.
That's an exciting move for
Avalon
you.
And CAA are a great team together.
Avalon's great. I got some friends over there too. So that's, I mean, you're going to be there. You're going to get there. You'll get something.
We'll see.
Yeah, knock on flat
we'll
earth.
As an Arab, I'm pessimistic the whole time.
Yeah.
So it has to be.
Is that in your nature to just kind of?
Yeah, because nothing good happens there. So, like, and if it happens, it's taken away. So we have a very nihilistic look to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explain that to me, because I feel like having a positive outlook on life. Is what it sounds like. You've had a great positive outlook on life so far. So to have the nihilistic and the pessimist of the realism of realizing that, you know.
Well, it's just like, I don't want to get too excited, because at a certain point I was very excited about me being like the number one in the Middle East, and that was taken away from me overnight. And then I'm a fugitive. So I was like, all right, I'm not gonna fall.
Yeah, but now you're the number one fugitive.
I'm the number one. But I didn't get a show yet.
That, I mean, you should pitch them a reboot of The Fugitive.
Yeah. Oh,
I could see you. I could see you as the fugitive.
The fugitive, Middle Eastern edition.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I will have like.
Say I did not kill my wife.
No, it's more of like about like the Homeland Security will be on my tail, which is more scary.
Yeah.
Homeland Security and NSA and FBI instead of like just like a guy just or, instead of like the sheriff.
Yeah, yeah.
The marshal.
I mean, that ups the stakes. That really makes it set current.
Yeah, but like, am I reinforcing the image of terrorists? Well, it's fine. I could be a vegan terrorist.
A vegan terrorist.
I'm vegan already.
Gluten-free. You're vegan already.
Yeah.
You've been here a year and a half and you're already vegan.
No, I'm vegan before that. So, like, I'm an Arab and a vegan, which makes me scary and annoying.
What made you convert to veganism?
Oh, that's a longer story. 4 years ago in Egypt, I had a friend of mine who had MS.
Okay.
And he reversed his condition over the years. And it's not veganism per se. It's more of like plant-based whole food diet, and I got educated about that, and I was just like, it opened my eyes, and I never went back since then.
Do you feel healthier?
Oh, much better.
Because you just said earlier, you were like, I swim and I work out every day.
Oh, yeah. It's like much more energy. I feel like it's it's just like made wonders to my body.
It's all plant-based.
Yes. Yeah, baby.
And you subscribe to that?
Oh, yeah.
As a physician, as a doctor?
I'm working on a project that's not related to politics or comedy. I'm shooting next 2 months from now, I'm shooting like a docu-series in Arabic and in English about plant-based diet. Because I want to educate people about this, because I helped so many people in Egypt.
Yeah.
Use my platform to help a lot of people, and I want to spread that. Because I've seen people with arthritis, with autoimmune disease, get better.
Yeah.
So I need to share this information with people.
Do you, what are your thoughts on like medicinal marijuana, since that's considered
I mean it's not for me.
Yeah.
Because like every time I try it, even the sativa strands, I just get knocked out.
Now, is sativa marijuana or is sativa a different?
I don't know. I know that there's a sativa and there's inca, I guess. There's an upper and a downer, I guess. So even when I tried the upper, I get knocked out and I sleep.
Yeah.
I try to find, I don't know, creative inspiration, but I end up sleeping every time.
Yeah.
So it's not for me. But
Because you're smoking it late at night?
I don't know. It knocks me out.
Yeah.
It's not for me, but I think it should be legal.
You think it should be legal? Do you think it should be legal across the board or just for medicinal purposes?
No, across the board.
Across the board.
Yeah.
I have some friends who use it for who have like chronic back pain or arthritis and things like that, and they'll smoke it for that, and it helps. Mm. And it's intriguing to me that even just switching to a plant-based diet can help those symptoms as well.
It will reduce your inflammation instantly.
What is the science behind that? Just because meat takes more to break down?
It's a true plant-based diet is an alkaline diet.
Okay.
And it doesn't put your body in an acidic state like the animal protein. And acidity is actually a cause for inflammation and lower your immunity. So basically, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of inflammatory factors in meat and eggs and cheese, and that kind of messes up with your body totally. So that's why it's when you remove that, just by the exclusion, the act of exclusion, your body feels better just like in 3-4 days.
Yeah. I'm going to try that out. I'm going to try that for a week.
You should.
I love my proteins. That's the tough.
But why do you say proteins?
It's like the meats, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's
people
wrong.
Work out say.
Proteins are in plants. Proteins are not like. I mean, where does the cow get to the protein? Where does the horse? Where does the giraffe?
Fair enough. What's a good plant that has a good source of protein then?
Beans. All green leafy vegetables, quinoa.
Quinoa.
Rice, sweet potato.
Okay. Yeah, I guess because sweet potato is what is a complex carb. Is that what sweet potato is?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I eat carbs.
You eat carbs?
Oh, yeah.
Breads?
Yeah.
Pastas?
Yeah.
I guess those are plant-based still, right?
Yeah.
I think of plant-based, I think of just greens and like
boring. Yeah,
which
is all salad.
No, I think of that.
I have like a very wide variety of food that I can eat because here's the thing. Here's the thing that I like about plant-based diet. And now it's turning into a cooking show and everybody is losing interest. But anyways, guys, we're saving the environment. Anyways. All of the diets, they work on one thing, which is eliminating carbs.
Okay.
Right?
Correct.
You don't eat carbs.
Seems like
carbs, carbs, carbs.
It's the new, yeah, yeah.
And what happens when you eliminate carbs? Your body craves sugar, right?
Correct.
So you crash.
Yeah.
Right? So you gain more weight. Plant-based diet does not eliminate carbs, but it gives you healthy carbs. It gives you potato, but not fry it. It gives you the pasta, but don't put like some crazy sauce on it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like it gives you the rice, but don't put like a ton of oil on it. It's that kind. It's like it's very elementary, very basic. So, and this is why we don't get the craving for sugar.
Yeah.
So that's why.
So you're not crashing because you're continually putting.
And that's why it's very sustainable.
That's my thing. Is I'm really a I need sugar. Like I crave a lot of sugar. That's my
you eat sugar because you eliminate it somewhere else.
Yeah.
So your body wants it. But if you give the body your carbs, I'm good.
Yeah. What else you got? So you got your podcast, you got this documentary coming out.
Yeah.
What are you working on?
I'm going to be in New York for 22 days. I have a comedy residency at Joe's Pub.
Oh, nice.
I'm working on a one-hour special there.
Okay, congrats. When are you doing that?
Starting of 10th of July.
Okay, 10th of July.
Joe's Pub.
Joe's Pub for?
For like 13 shows.
For 13 shows. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And where can everybody find you on social media?
Bassem Youssef, that's my Facebook, Instagram, Bassem Youssef, and Twitter, B. Youssef.
B. Yusuf. Yeah. And Remade in America, where can people listen or watch?
Remade in America, whenever you can listen on podcasts and Apple Podcasts, of course. And subscribe, download, and all the shebang.
I love it. Bassem, thank you so much. Are you good?
So
you good? Did you enjoy this?
Of course.
Wonderful. Oh my God. I like what we talked about.
Right? I enjoy talking about plant-based diet.
I'm
telling you, I'm scary and annoying.
I like it. I try to be my best self, and you know I try to adapt and learn as much as I can about you know things like that, because in the end I want to live as long as I can
as healthy as you can,
especially talking to a heart doctor. Both my grandfathers had heart problems, so I want to, I try to, I exercise, I'll hike, a couple times a week.
Yeah, and
I try to keep it.
To understand that, exercise is great and everything is great, but it's what you put in your body.
Yeah.
Because you can do, you can be a monster at the gym. And that's why you have a lot of people who die at a very young age, and you see the muscular and fits, what happened to him, right? Yeah. Don't you hear that a lot?
A lot.
Some 33, 35, yeah. 38, 40, 40 years. What happened to him? He dropped dead in the gym. He dropped dead in the sweat because, they're destroying their body from inside. Yeah, they could be muscular, they could be thin from the outside, but they're fat from the outside. All of these cholesterol is coming, is clogging your blood vessels, and there's no exercises that will help with that. It's they keep their vessels inflamed. When it's inflamed, it clogs, and it clogs and it stops suddenly. And that's why it's they have a sudden death.
So that's what Kevin Smith had. His heart was... The Widowmaker?
I don't know if Kevin Smith was fat and then lost weight, or was he doing that? It was on diet. I'm talking about the people that we know every day. This last year, I know people on personal basis, at least 8 or 10 people who died in their 30s.
Yeah.
And they were you see their pictures, they're muscular.
But it's because, so even exercise doesn't,
exercise helps, but it does not make you immune if you're doing bad choices in food. Mm-hmm. And when I say bad choices, I don't mean fast food or sugars, because that's a done deal.
Obvious,
I'm talking
yeah.
about if you think that you can eat a ton of meat, or you can eat chicken and you can eat fish and you can eat eggs and you can get
away.
Okay,
I eat a lot of chicken, chicken's bad for you?
Chicken is as bad as meat.
Really?
Fish is as bad as meat and chicken.
Even if there's no
eggs,
fat on it?
What do you mean?
I make sure when I cook it, I cut all the white stuff
off.
That's
bullshit. Chicken has the same amount of, almost the same amount of cholesterol as meat.
Really?
Yeah, and there's some kinds of fish that have twice or three times the amount of cholesterol. This is all this is all misconception that we have about food. Every time you eat chicken or meat, there's tons of cholesterol and tons of inflammatory factors that goes in and messes up with your body. And that's why you have inflammation. That's why you get sick a lot. That's why you feel tired. That's why you feel your energy drained. And that's why your blood vessels inside get clogged and you don't know about it.
Is there a way to get them unclogged? Or is it once they're clogged, they're kind of
No, it's all reversible, because your body always renews itself. You just need to give it a chance.
Okay.
I mean, the internal lining of your intestine completely changes every 6 days.
Really?
If you keep it in a continuous state of inflammation, that's not going to happen. And this is why you have all of these young people with Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease is just almost endemic now, right?
Yeah.
Why? Because everybody's eating meat. Everybody's eating all of high fat. If you open any medical text and look at the etiology of Crohn's disease, number one, high fat protein diet. And by the way, when you eat lean meat, there's fat.
Yeah.
You're not eating protein without the fat. You eat protein with a very high taxes of fat. If a beautiful
lean
steak, it has a ton of fat.
Yeah.
So the protein comes with the fat. But you eat beans, you get zero fat. It's amazing. And you get the fiber and you get the vitamins and you get the minerals, everything. Yeah, everything that you put in your body, you pay a tax for it.
Yeah.
So if you get the eggs, I have so much protein. What about the cholesterol? You get the chicken, you get the fish. Very amazing protein, but you get the mercury and you get all of that. If you get all of the same nutrients from somewhere else without paying these taxes, and even get more fiber and more nutrients and more vitamins that you never get because there's zero fiber in meat, right?
Yeah.
So isn't that better to go to this? And people say that's extreme. Okay, that's extreme, but cracking your chest open and having a vein from your leg putting it there, that's not
my
extreme.
My grandfather had that.
Right?
Yeah. Is there a way, so like if I already have a bunch of cholesterol in my heart right now, is there a way to, that, like, no amount of exercise will clean those arteries up?
If you continue to eat the same thing.
If I continue, but if I switch to like a plant-based diet.
2-3 weeks, you're
really?
Yeah, it's
so great. Then I can go back to eating.
And then you can, like, you know, just like get your body in a fucked up cycles every single 3 weeks. That's amazing. Yes. Yes. I'm sure it's very healthy. And you have to stop drinking that shit.
Oh, but it's so good.
It's so horrible.
It wakes me up.
You see, I'm telling you, I'm annoying. I'm scary and I'm annoying. I'm judging all your food choices right now.
Next time I go grocery shopping, horrible, I'm going to email you pictures of
what I can
get.
This is horrible. Like, I went in, it's like, guys, do you have lunch? And I'm already, like, you know, expressing my annoying traits. Oh, yeah. Do you have something vegan?
You know, though?
Your stuff already hates me.
It's the but that's how, I mean, that's how change gets happened, I guess, you know? Yeah. That's how, you know, even like with revolutions or whatever, you need the squeaky wheel to really get the grease into change.
The number one reason for bankruptcy in America is medical bills.
I believe it.
So, isn't that extreme?
That's the best reason for change, is to not need to do that.
Yeah.
Bassem, thank you so much
thank
for joining
so much.
Us. Thank you so much. Follow him on Instagram, listen to his podcast, do all that. If you're in New York, go see him. My buddy Zach's in New York. I'll have to tell him to go see
you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for watching. Check us out. Check out the other episodes on Prohibited. Follow me on Instagram at my name is Razzle. On Twitter at my name is Razzle too. And don't forget to buy my book, Don't Be a Dick, on Amazon.com. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.